Clearly, worship is one of the most vulnerable areas of Holden's life. I would say year-round, but particularly during the summer. The largest stack of mail that I get annually probably has to do with worship. The second largest stack is probably to do with certain issues that the village takes on. Maybe at times that those two stacks are reversed. The third area of real vulnerability is food in the village. Those are probably the three things that we are critiqued about most of all. The concerns by a number of board members about worship would be these, I think, and that is that many of them would feel that Holden has a long-standing tradition that they would like to see maintained, where there is a separation between pulpit and lectern and town meeting or community forum or community meeting. They criticize us, and particularly me, when they see those distinctions eroding, when worship becomes a teaching, exclusively a teaching forum, particularly they become vociferous when they see it becoming a podium for political advocacy. Now, every board member has their own definitions of which are which. We had a worship service last summer that I thought was the most magnificent statement of God's grace I'd ever heard. About a third of the board members thought it was nothing but political advocacy. So, you know, there is this kind of debate that rages about what is what. But the tradition is to try to separate those. Worship, they see, is a place where they would want to see the proclamation of the gospel being made clearly and forthrightly. They would see the lectern or the teaching podium is the kind of place where teaching goes on in the village, which is done from the perspective of whoever is the teacher, and people are engaged in debate and conversation. And they would see the community meeting, the town hall, such as we had last night, where people were expressing their feelings as the appropriate forum for that. And they would like to see that tradition maintained at Holden Village, where there's a distinction between those kinds of events. Now, if you ask board members, what does it mean to proclaim the gospel? Then, of course, you get a wide variety of responses depending upon their own particular tradition and perspective. There would be some themes in that. Themes would have to do with God's unconditional love and acceptance, God's initiation of that unconditional love and acceptance, God's concern for the release of those who have been oppressed through the life, the teachings, the death, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Those are the kinds of images that you would get in response, I think, from board members. If they don't hear those kinds of motifs, then I would think that at least a significant percentage of them would say somehow the gospel has not been proclaimed. It may well be an insightful worship service, but the gospel hasn't been proclaimed. And it's the pulpit, it's the worship service where they would want, hold, and to maintain the tradition of the proclamation of the gospel. So, I think that's the best way I can respond to the question, what are the board's expectations for us as a community? Any questions about that? Might be more helpful for me to respond to some questions.
Is there written expectations or from the board?
There are written expectations that the village presents to those who are going to take responsibility for a worship service at Holy Village. Berlan sends those, for example, to all of, well, I think everyone who we ask, right?
Everybody who's who we ask to speak during the summer, with the exception of the staff, but I'm talking about teaching staff who come, and also to village musicians, we send a write-up. It's a one-page deal, and it basically says that Holden is committed to preaching the gospel, and that Holden is committed to inclusive language, and it sets a time limit for Vespers, and it says that something to the effect that to be something about being open to all traditions, not, or that something to the effect that it is the gospel that we expect to preach, but we're also aware of the fact that not everybody in our midst in the summer is or Lutherans or indeed practicing Lutherans.
One of the groups, they have committees that meet when they meet as a board, and one of them went over that piece last time and critiqued it, felt it wasn't strong enough in certain areas and made suggestions about what they thought we ought to say. So in that sense, there is a written piece, but that's the only written piece that I'm aware of. So.
Do people doing Vespers in the winter not receive that?
No, I don't hand it out to people in the winter. We have a little blurb up above the calendar that I wrote out that talks about, you know, I think it does use the word Christ-centered, and it does talk about how long a matin should be. It's basically a smaller kind of a composite of what's written for the summer. But it's somewhat impractical to hand those things out to everybody, you know, all winter. You know, I suppose we could do it, but we don't.
Is it my understanding the board members come to the village on occasion and then you get feedback from their experience here, or I guess if it's positive, you don't, if it's negative, you do?
Yeah, typically people who have something negative to say are more vociferous, and certainly more letter writers than those that have positive things to say, typically. The board comes here during the summer for, most of them are here for a week. During that time they have their meeting. There are others who will come and visit or volunteer or do various things during the course of the year. I wish more of them would come and spend more time. They of course also get their ears bent by those who come and have a critique to make. So I'll, for example, I'll get a letter from a pastor who was here during the Light Conference, who in addition to writing to me, will send copies of their letter to several board members. And then, of course, the board members will all respond and send me their letters. And I got such a letter, for example, out of the last Light Conference, the pastor was complaining about a matin service where the focus was on nature, and they felt that there was no proclamation or no connection made with our own Christian tradition, and that it was pure nature worship, and they felt that was totally out of place at Holden Village. That would be the kind of, and that letter was sent to varieties of board members. And then, of course, some of them will write me and say, is this true, and is this really going on? One of the things we do at Holden Village is that we don't ask people to submit the manuscripts to Verlaine before they stand up and do something. And I've certainly sat through many matins and vesper services that I thought were less than what I might hope for. And I'm often candid with people and I tell them that, you know. But at Holden Village, you have the freedom to do that. And then we'll hopefully talk about it afterwards and say, you know, people will react and say how they felt about it. Sometimes they don't, but that's part of the freedom, I think, that Holden tries to foster.
I guess, yeah. I'm wondering what you do with the fact that the liberation of the oppressed is by its very nature a political act.
Right. How do you separate that from the gospel?
How can you expect nothing political to be coming up in vespers that are done by the people and for the people?
Well, we don't.
That's often the question I ask people in a letter. My concept of the gospel has to do with speaking a word of freedom to people in real, live, oppressed situations, not some theoretical pie-in-the-sky kind of intellectual abstraction. I don't know how you make that. I've never been able to make that separation. But some people don't make that connection, or they only make it very selectively with certain kinds of issues. You know, it's like the gospel to one set of issues is the gospel, but the gospel to another set of issues is not the gospel, because they don't like that particular, they're offended by that particular issue.
I'd be interested in hearing from different people here, but from Verlaine particularly, and from you, Scott, to what your definitions of Christ-centered worship, how what that means to you, and how you see that influencing the way that you put together and carry out worship here.
Okay, well, let me respond to that, and then I'll let Verlaine respond to that. I think one of Holden's main mission is, I see Holden largely as a lay education center of the church. I think what we do here is education in our own way, you know. The kind of curriculum we have is tailor-made in a sense to the kind of context and setting and community and everything else. But I think that also behooves us to help make connections for people. And I think one of our failings is at times we don't make connections for people, or we've gotten to a certain place ourselves and don't realize that we need to help others make the kind of connections that we've made.
How do you mean connections? You mean theologically, or
yeah,
in terms of
Right. In other words, when
different
we get
metaphors or different ways of talking about God.
Yeah. I mean, you do this. You stand up and talk about Native American culture and theology, and you try to make connections for people in terms of how that's related to our own Christian tradition. It's not antithetical to our tradition, but in many ways enriches, amplifies our own tradition. It's something that we can learn from. You make connections for people between that and our own Christian faith and tradition. I think it's really important that particularly in worship, that we make connections for people between what we're doing and what we see Jesus was up to, for example, or thematically, what we see God was up to in Jesus, or God has been up to in our own lives and situation, and not just assume those connections. So, you know, Christ, the word Christ for me is a word that describes an entity, a reality that existed, of course, long before Jesus. It's a word that it's used for Messiah. Jesus had a very special relationship to Christ, so much so that we call Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus Christ. And the word Christ describes a reality that has gone on beyond the historical Jesus of Nazareth. I think it's helpful for us in Christ-centered worship to help people make a connection between, if we're talking about nature, or if we're talking about, well, environmental issues, if we're talking about relational issues, if we're talking about political issues related to the varieties of oppressions that exist, that we make a connection or help people make a connection between those and this reality that we call Christ. And I think if we can do that, then I think it's we have helped people buy into what God is up to today. If we don't do that, then I think we really leave them hanging. We say at Holden that Jesus stands at the very center of what we are and we do, that we kind of keep one eye on what Jesus was up to, trying to understand how what Jesus was up to relates to what we're up to, and trying to build those connections for people. So that's kind of where I would come from on that issue. Yeah.
I have another question. Is it my understanding that there is room in our worship services to talk about that reality which you call Christ, using different kinds of language for it? Or does Christ-centered mean that we have to use the word Christ to describe that reality?
I think Verlon talks about when he gets teaching staff together, for example, in the summer. One of the things, when he talks about inclusivity, for example, he not only talks about male-female kinds of images, but he talks about including many kinds of images for God and what God is up to today and so forth. I think we ought to be encouraged to use all of those metaphors. I don't know, you know, from my point of view, you can't talk about God without using metaphors. Now, some people take issue with me on that. A lot of pastors do, because they're convinced that there are only certain images that can be used that are identified exclusively with God. But that's not my experience. That's not my theological perspective. Now, I think it's helpful for people when we're in a teaching role or in a leadership role to try to begin where they are and to help them on the next step. I think that's what every teacher does, is try to understand where the student is and then not begin someplace else, but begin where the student is And the fact is we have a lot of people, particularly during the summer, who I think could be helped more than perhaps we've been able to help them. If we could make a connection between some of the traditional imagery and the imagery that's become meaningful to us or that we're exploring, rather than just sort of laying it out there without building that connection for them. I think that's a helpful teaching pedagogy for us at Holden, and one in which we probably don't discipline ourselves enough to do, because we're comfortable with certain metaphors, and so we just kind of go merrily along. But for Lon, I guess to Eric,
I forgot.
Question to us.
I wanted to get your sense of, you know, what does that term Christ-centered mean for you, and how does that inform what you do as you lead worship or as you talk to others who are going to be leading worship? I had a sense last fall when we started talking about it that it wasn't clear. You know, we all have different ideas, perhaps, or about what Christ-centered means. I'm real interested in what that means to you, I guess.
To me, Christ-centered means just what it says, Christ born and crucified and resurrected, you know. Now, you can attack that on all levels. Some people believe it happens historically. Some people believe it happens metaphorically. Some think it's just a psychological thing. I happen to believe all three. And if people aren't exactly where I want them to be, when they leave Vespers, I don't make a big stink out of it, because I know where it is for me. If someone gets up and does a Vespers that's obviously Buddhist philosophy, I take the Christ symbol in that philosophy and use it for myself, because that's what it, I can see Christ in Buddha and vice versa. And I think that's what I encourage other people to do as well. You know, I can't, if Holden is a teaching community, and we don't require that people who come here be Christian, let alone Lutheran, then I feel like we should expect for people not to be, everybody not to be in the same boat. I ask for people to share where their faith is. I hope that it's Christ-centered, but if it's not, I think, you know, the community's not going to fall apart because one person gives a 3-minute matins or a 20-minute vespers that doesn't center around Christ. There's enough stuff that goes on in the village that does. And sometimes if the person's really off base, it's my job to go to that person afterwards and ask them what they were getting at, what was the point of what they did, and that sort of thing. But if I don't get a feeling that it's destructive or distracting, I feel like it's, you know, we could be open to that.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask whether in this meeting we are addressing a problem per se at Holden. I understand we're here to decide what Christ-centered worship means. Are we also resolving some conflict? Have there been problems? And are we addressing specific difficulties with Vespers or Matins? It just seems that we're talking about the sort of definition, and I'm interested in the application.
Well, part of the application is that there are some people in the community who do not believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. And that's part of it. That's part of the problem. Part of the problem, too, is what Scott mentioned earlier about the board having a very defined definition. Maybe very defined isn't right. Out of 30 people on the board, you may have 20 different definitions of what the gospel is in terms of preaching the gospel. And like last summer someone gave a Vespers and read out of Earth Prayers and it mentioned God as coyote and upset some people because they said God is not a coyote. Or oftentimes people get upset with God in nature that you hear a lot around here. And so the way I see it, those are just a couple of the problems in terms of Christ.
But would it be then hope that we're coming out of this meeting we'd have what, guidelines, or would we be resolving some of that? Do you think we're going to, I mean, is the purpose here to somehow get back to the community some direction for these services?
My assumption is that the purpose is that people want to know where Holden stands, where Scott and I and Mark stand in terms of mostly being responsible for making sure that worship happens, and where they stand in terms of what, you know, what they do, what
so
they do.
So there's a sharing information about what your views are. I see. Thank you.
I know it's something that I've run into an awful lot, especially starting in October. A lot of different folks with a lot of different definitions of what was worship have approached me. I work closely with a lot of folks designing services and just working with some ideas. And you know, especially talk to folks afterwards that were disappointed or did not like what happened. And I don't know, I guess part of my goal in bringing up this topic again is to hear those voices, because a lot of them do conflict. And I don't necessarily hope to see a resolution, but I'd just like to hear, I guess, some views aired about what it is that is Christ-centered. I'd just like, well, for me personally, to feel a little bit of resolution within me that I can relate with the broad span of people that that do worship.
To me, some of the dullest worship we've ever had was done by professional teaching staff last summer. I felt like they had canned worship when they came up here. They had stuff that they had obviously used somewhere in some seminary. Talking to people who use that language, and they came here and used it, and it simply did not fly. And some of the most exciting worship that we did was by staff people. People who came up and said, you know, I'd like to do a Vespers, and it was kind of a one-shot thing. It was people who don't do that every day for a living and who really put a lot of thought and effort into it. Did not take it lightly, and you know, most of us don't talk to 400 or 500 people on a regular basis, and so it was with some fear that they took it on, and I found it very, very exciting much of the time because they had an approach and used language and metaphors that. That were fresh and new and to the point and from their own persons, and it was fun, and I look forward to different types of worship and different.
I'd like to offer some of my perspectives, just to throw it out there, and I appreciate hearing from three of you. And I find myself in agreement with a lot of what you're suggesting also. When Scott was talking about the board concerns, what came to mind immediately in the spectrum there was the constant tension that exists between the universal nature of the gospel, that it's applicable to all people, all creation, and the particular aspects of the gospel and the claims that in Jesus of Nazareth
there's something unique there, and that you can never get away from that tension. It's always kind of ebbing and flowing between those two points, just like in our tradition. And I think Mark Edwards spoke to this when he was here. We've had this kind of ebb and flow between the sense of the immanence of God, God's immediacy to us, God's accessibility to us, which is supremely there in Christ, in Jesus, and yet God's transcendence, God beyond us, and how those are always in tension too. So there's always kind of this paradox, this inner dialogue, and for me that's always present in worship too, that you're, rather than trying to avoid that tension or that paradox, that worship, we recognize that and we assume that, and yet we also assume that God's Spirit intercedes for our prayers and our songs and our words with sighs too deep for words, and translates whatever we do into an acceptable offering, if you will. For me, worship needs to not only refer to, perhaps, and be very personal, dealing with the person who's leading worship, or with the community, but I think worship, Christ-centered worship, always points somehow beyond itself. That there's a reference point outside of me personally to whom I'm striving or pointing or making reference. And my experience at here the past couple months is that I haven't always felt that way about Vespers. Sometimes I've felt that Vespers has been centered on an individual person. And I was found looking for the connection beyond the community or beyond to God somehow. For me also, worship in terms of connecting with what you said, Scott, about, you know, having these touch points or these points where we can connect with people, making connections, that in a context like Holden, it's important to explore new metaphors and new symbols. And at the same time, I think it's important in Christ-centered worship to use symbols which have tremendous invested meaning in, that are there within the tradition too. Water, whatever. I mean, there's lots of different images. When we did the John the Baptist thing, we used images, you know, of drowning, of water, of fire, of being burned. Different metaphors having to do with baptism and that. But I think our tradition is full of good symbols. There's also been some harmful or destructive symbols that have dominated some aspects of our tradition over the past two millennium. And so we have this choice to make about what we use and so on. But I think it's most helpful, particularly when we have such a diversity of people, both Christian and non-Christian, conservative and progressive theologically or whatever. I think the challenge is to find how does the string, whatever's happening, lead back to the tradition? And how does it lead to God? How does it point beyond itself to the one in whom we find our source and our being? So I don't think it's important to apologize for what we do as being too Christian or too Christ-centered. Sometimes I feel a hesitancy on the part of people to do that. I think we need to be not apologize for the Christ-centeredness of what the community is. And that allows even more freedom when there's a strong statement of belief there that's experienced in the worship. So those are just some of the thoughts that I had. And I'd love to hear more also from others.
Another thought that I had, Verlon, is that I'm a little uncomfortable talking just about Christ-centered worship. It seems to me that one of the central categories of our tradition is that we are not just a Christ-centered tradition or Christ-centered faith. In fact, Christians have wanted to say historically that we experience the reality of God in God as divine parent, God as Jesus, God as Spirit. So we have, you know, this Trinitarian notion of the reality of God, realizing that you know, the best we can do is metaphors, but we've wanted to round out our own experience of God in a variety of ways, and at least traditionally, at least in those three ways. And not get stuck in either the first, what we would call traditionally, the first person, second person, or third person of the Godhead. It's interesting historically how various traditions within the Christian community have picked up on one of those sort of persons or another, and it seems to me our affirmation of faith is that, you know, we need to kind of deal with them all somehow. And so I guess, you know, I'd want to say that our worship is inclusive of all three.
Yeah, so that raises the question, what does Christ mean, I guess?
Right, and that's part of our discussion, is what is that word? You know, a word is not a thing, the word points to a reality. What does that word point to that's a reality in our experience, in our life, in our history, in our understanding, and so forth? And that's an interesting discussion in itself, and also that's an interesting discussion of how that relates to Jesus of Nazareth. Are you boycotting?
Hi, Jennifer.
I think it would be those discussions, those kind of theological discussions, I think would be really helpful in the community. And in some ways, I hunger for those discussions and wish we would have more of them about, you know, how one of the books that we are going to read together is Borg's book on Jesus. And some of those issues will come up in that. You know, what was the relationship of Jesus of Nazareth to this reality that we call the Christ? And, you know, and I think that's a very interesting discussion. And how does that relate to our understanding of Jesus today, and how we take our cues from what Jesus was up to in terms of trying to be up to the same kind of things he was up to, and only in our context today, which is different than his, and so forth. Yeah.
I think that I think that so much of our worship is just plain old boring. And some of it has to do with the same thing that's going on now. I mean, just a few people are talking and everyone else is just sitting there. And I think, you know,
I thought they were so enthralled with everything they had to say.
either people don't care or they don't have any concerns. But sometimes when you're up in front of a group of people talking, you can just feel the boredom, you know, coming at you, you know. And part of what I try to do is just to not be boring. Sometimes that sparks, you know, sparks interest. And to not be boring means oftentimes to be as honest as you can be. So I'm asking for honesty in this subject, and so we can get some excitement generated. Go ahead.
Well, here's my concern then. I guess the main reason that I'm here and what I feel we need to talk about is the fact that I've heard in the months that I've been here about the kinds of scuttlebutt that's gone down when people have been too political in their Vespers services and such, and blah, 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 and there's a lot of talk that goes on the one hand saying, you know, don't be too political, on the other hand, be honest about your life. I think about the fact that the way Jesus taught was telling stories about daily life. You know, storytelling was the way he chose to talk about God and didn't sit around intellectualizing it and making it this big complex thing. But while I hear the message, you know, you're all encouraged to participate or lead a Vespers, you're all encouraged to share honestly what your spiritual walk is, I have a fear that if I were to do so, to talk about my spiritual walk, I'm not going to be getting around talking in some way, shape, or form about my lesbian identity, which I think in a lot of people's minds, probably especially during the summer, I don't sense this as much in the winter community, but I have a feeling that would probably throw up a lot of red flags in people's minds and say, oh, that's political, keep that out of there, you know, we're going to have a big stink about that and say, you know, we have to acknowledge the fact that the community is coming from a lot of different places and there are going to be those people that think that my saying anything about being a lesbian is not going to be Christ-centered because there's so many different understandings of that political issue. And I guess what I need to know is whether or not the sort of fundamental understanding on the part of y'all here is something that would allow me to do that and feel safe about it, or if I should just keep quiet, especially when summertime comes. Because I don't want to put myself out on a limb that is going to get chopped down and burned to the ground, you know, without knowing that there's some kind of support or some kind of understanding about what I'd be trying to do, because I have this feeling that I could talk about my life and relate it to the tradition. You know, I consider myself a Christian. I can talk about Christ. I can use those words. I can talk about God in my life and what's going on. And I might still get shot down for it. And I think that there's a hesitancy in this community to be honest out of sort of the unknown whether or not something's going to get shot down that is very personal and close to the heart. And I don't really know what I hope for you to say about that, but I know that that's a concern that I have and that I've heard similar things from other people in the community, not necessarily about, you know, this, not with the same specifics, but the same general concern. You know, I'd love to be honest with this community about my spiritual journey, but I've got to have some fears about that, and I'm not in a place right now where I feel like being incredibly unsafe with myself.
Well, people have expressed that many times this winter, and quite frankly, there's no way I can promise you safety. I can promise you that I will support you. I can promise you that I won't shoot you down. But that's the only promise that I can give. Whenever you stand up in front of a group of people and say anything, you know, you're taking a risk. That's why people are afraid of public speaking. I mean, there are people here in the village who have told me they don't do Vespers and Matins, you know, because they're afraid of speaking in front of a group. And part of that fear of speaking in front of a group is that no matter what we say, and we've had a couple of Vespers about it, a couple of discussions about Vespers, about not going up after a person gives Vespers and beating up on them, people are going to come up and who disagree with where you stand. When I get up on Sundays, not a Sunday goes by where I preach where someone doesn't come up and tell me that there is something about that sermon that, you know, that they didn't like. Even the ones that I think really worked well, and there are some I think really worked well, and then there are some I'd like to leave somewhere in the middle. I don't know, I can't guarantee anybody total safety. I mean, you just, there is none, really.
Well, I guess my concern is hardly total safety, because I don't expect that in my life at any point. And I also am not a person that's particularly afraid of speaking in a group.
So what's the problem? I don't understand.
The problem is, I don't think it's only my problem. The problem is, I hear a lot of hurt from people that I care about that echo with my experience, that I sometimes just plow right over and go ahead and do what I'm going to do, but I don't think I'm the only person feeling that. And my concern is that, you know, I know a lot of the people here well enough to expect support from people here, but I guess I am kind of curious about what sort of statement the board has, and whether there is something that one could point to when the people do come up with complaints or try to shoot you down about that. Where is it written that says that I can do what I would do? You know?
What are you going to do? I mean, you make it sound like you're going to do something, you know, set yourself on fire or something. I don't know what else to say, Allison, other than as far as I'm concerned, you can do what you want to do. Scott has already said the board doesn't have anything written up.
Yeah.
They're not coming after you. You know, they won't, by the time they get here, you'll be gone. You know, so I don't, you know, and Scott and I are left to take the heat, and we've gotten pretty good at that.
They'll come after me.
Yeah. So I guess I don't understand.
I guess maybe all that I'm asking is that I think it would be kind of cool for maybe the board to have a discussion about having some notion that you can separate the political from the spiritual.
Well, they do. And
I wouldn't want to sit in.
It's some of those are their best and most vigorous discussions, and they don't agree. You've heard me, well, maybe you don't remember this, but I said during bonding week, I said one of the things I will pledge, you know, one of my roles here as the director is to be bodyguard. Remember? I don't know if you remember that. I used that in it. I said I have two major roles. One is to make sure that Jesus stands at the center of what we're doing. And when I feel the community has moved away from that, to call us back to that. But another role I have is to be bodyguard, which is to say that I'll take the heat, because that's usually where it comes. I see that as one of my roles. And I think historically that's been one of the roles of the director of Holden Village, is to try to create enough space so that people with vulnerability and unsureness and tentativity can stand up and say where it is for them, and then for me to say to those who may wish to critique that, That's what we do at Holden Village. And it may not be everything you wish for or even I wish for, but that's what we do. And we continue to move along that developmental path. Now, I think it works well when people do that and they really do it from an authentic place in themselves, and they're really trying to struggle with where they are over against the tradition, and where they're really trying to be sensitive to the group that they're speaking to. You know, they're not just getting up, you know, in some self-righteous kind of mode, but they're really being sensitive. My experience is it works really well, and the people respond well. They may not all understand, they may not all agree, they may see it differently, but there is a lot of acceptance. And I think it would be tragic if we ever got to the place where people felt like, you know, they just can't say anything for fear that they're going to get lambasted, you know.
Well, and I think we maybe are, in a way, at a place where I know a number of people that do have that kind of fear and that do choose to be quiet. And maybe what I'm asking is that it couldn't be said often enough, that affirmation of trying to be honest, because, you know, it does get repeated when we have a meeting like this or something. But I don't know that message is heard one-tenth as often as the blasting stuff gets heard.
Sure.
And maybe if, I don't know.
If we said it more often, that would be.
Yeah.
The only complaint with Vespers, one of my main complaints with Vespers, when I go and talk to a person after Vespers, is when I think that person has blamed the community, has dumped on the community. I can take philosophies, it doesn't matter if someone's all the way to the right or all the way to the left, if that Vespers and worship is out of the heart, it's fine with me. You know, we've given one time we had a sermon, and I just picked five people out of the village, and the sermon was five people who got up and talked for a minute, that talked about where Christ was in their life, and they all came from five different perspectives, and it was wonderful. I had no problem with that. But I think where I have a problem, and where most of the village has a problem, is when they feel dumped on and blamed for where somebody is in their life. And those are the most difficult Vespers to deal with. And the hard part about it is that some of those people who do those Vespers may not even be aware that they're dumping on people. And my job, I see it, is to make them aware that I feel that they dumped on the community. And the tricky thing about it is that, you know, oftentimes it's over with by the time I talk to them. You know, they've done it. And, you know, we have to clean up after them, but, so. Yeah.
I really see for me, the issue seems to be, in my short time here, whether people come to Vespers to communicate or to worship. And it seems to me that if we could always remember that we are gathering together at Vespers as a worship service, and that can be, I think there's great freedom to worship in whatever way is appropriate and to share our way of worship with others. But when we come not to worship but to communicate or put a point across or resolve a conflict or any, you know, when we lose sight of what we're doing as a community at Vespers, then I think we run into problems.
I think you're right.
Yep.
But one thing Holden cannot promise is consistency. You know, we cannot promise consistency. I mean, different people come up and you're coming, and all those different people are coming from different perspectives, and it's different every day. You get a lot of weirdness, but you also get a lot of nice surprises. And, you know, you just can't have consistency here. Not to the extent that some people are used to, I guess.
Verlander?
Yeah.
I think one thing the way I always looked at it is, one of the critical things is that worship is required at the village. You know, like Vespers is a requirement for the community. And, you know, that carries, I think, some responsibilities and obligations that it wouldn't if it was strictly an optional activity. Worship, I think, also is what sort of sets the pace so that at other times during the day and evening we can have very intense conversations but still all be gathered around a Christ-centered community. I think the other thing is that if worship, I guess, doesn't somehow impart grace, at least for me, and it's just a personal thing, then I don't mind being, I think part of it is also to be convicted. We are sinful people, and we need the conviction, but if that's all we receive, then I'm not sure that at least for me, again, all I can do is speak, personally, that if I don't also receive a dose of grace, then I guess for me it's sort of a waste.
Caroline, somebody back here had a question.
This is back a while. I was just wondering what the whole was all about, because it sounded like you wanted to define what Christ-centered was, or maybe ask people to do their maps or send that around Christ-centered. But then it sounded like you were saying that that was it was just a term that people could feel like they could define for themselves. And then you were saying that you wanted to let people feel safe. And I'm confused at what the whole issue is, really. I don't think that, can you clarify for me what's going on here? Because I just feel like we're talking in circles, and you mean they and them and those people and these people. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Okay.
Okay. I think on all of our literature at Holden, we make no secret that Holden is a Christian community. Okay. Everybody knows that when they come here. Now, if they're not Christian and they come here, part of me feels like I'm not quite sure how much sympathy I have for them if they come here and complain about Christ-centeredness if they're not Christian, yet they see on the brochure that we're a Christian community. Okay? That's part of it. Another part is that Christ-centered, yes, it's my hope and my desire that every worship service we have at Holden Village is Christ-centered. But then on the other side, if it is not as Christ-centered as I would like them to be, then it's up to me to find something Christ-centered in it for myself.
Why don't we just tell everybody who comes to the village that?
We do. It's in all our literature.
Okay, well, I don't see the problem, really.
Well, the problem is that people either don't do it or can't do it or won't do it or,
Or people have different definitions.
Yeah, people have different definitions.
I think that's part of the great thing about it.
I do, too.
Ron, I think part of the problem in meetings like this, there are a lot of people who have opinions, including me, and I'm going to express one, who don't really want to say anything. I mean, they want to say something to you one-on-one in your office, or they want to complain to two or three of their friends at the dinner table about either we aren't Christ-centered or we've deviated from a path that they think we should be on, and then they don't say anything when we get together in these forums. I don't feel cheated when I come to Vespers. I don't feel cheated when I go to Matins. Unfortunately, we're all different. We all have a different thought as we all sit here and discover. We continually discover every day that we're all uniquely different. Unfortunately, most of us also think that in that difference that our opinion is pretty terrific. But then, when we all sit down in a group, a lot of us then don't want to express that opinion for fear of either reprisal or at the risk of using that trite phrase, politically incorrect.